From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Bridget Dowd with your state and local news update. This week, KTOO's news team is taking a look at Juneau's urban avalanche danger. In the spring of 2008, every Juneau resident was affected by a huge set of avalanches that wiped out a set of towers for a power transmission line, severing the capital city's connection to its biggest source of hydroelectricity. When the city switched to diesel generators, Juneau residents quickly had to figure out ways to conserve electricity. Others faced financial hardship with electricity costs that were suddenly 500% higher. KTOO's Matt Miller has this look back.
Juneau-based avalanche forecaster Bill Glued says the April 2008 avalanches were the biggest he's ever seen and at the absolute top of the scale for size and destruction.
They did, in fact, gouge the landscape. Not only did they remove forests, but they took a lot of the area right down to bedrock, just ripped all the soil out as well. It was pretty impressive. There was a lot of yellow cedar floating out in the arm, big chunks of snow and lots of trees.
The slides damaged at least two towers and destroyed three others for the main transmission line that runs more than 40 miles to town. Juneau got cut off from its main source of cheap hydroelectric power. Alaska Electric Light and Power, Juneau's electric utility, ran diesel generators to meet demand. Back then, the high price of diesel fuel meant that the typical household suddenly faced electricity bills that jumped to five times what they were before. Edward Thomas had just finished a term as president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. He still remembers what tribal citizens were experiencing then, like a friend of his who was afraid of turning up the electric heat in his home.
He turned everything down too much, and his pipes all froze under his kitchen, and then flooded out his whole kitchen. And he's handicapped, so he had a real, a traumatic experience with all that stuff.
People who relied on public assistance programs had to wait before their assistance actually matched their increased electricity costs.
So you're basically behind by 2 months by the time a family can make up the difference for what they're paying and the higher costs.
He also remembers higher grocery costs and cuts in bus service. Thomas says his family focused on conserving electricity. They turned off unneeded lights, dialed down the electric heat, and closed off unoccupied rooms. He says they also disconnected all the items that still drew power, even when turned off.
Yes, we shut everything down that we possibly could during the day. Unplugged TVs, unplugged appliances that had little lights on them.
Bruce Patello was the mayor of Juneau at the time. He was focused on conserving energy in those weeks after the avalanche, too. He stopped using his clothes dryer.
I think we got in the habit of draping laundry over banisters to dry out. Practice that my wife still does, particularly larger items, sheets and the like.
Patello says repairs to the transmission line were expected to take several months. The city wanted to provide fast relief for residents,
but also to give them a sense of confidence that we cared about them, that we were taking steps that would bring the crisis to conclusion as quickly as possible and to do it with the least amount of impact.
Steps like suspending sales taxes on the extra surcharge for electricity bills. There were loan programs for businesses and other relief grants for individuals and organizations. Electricity powers the city's wastewater treatment plants and the pumps that deliver fresh water around town. So, Batello says they tried encouraging water conservation, too.
We estimated that the crisis was going to cost an additional $15,000 a day to maintain Juneau's water system with literally 140 miles of pipe.
As well as the damaged and destroyed towers, there was over a mile of cable from the transmission line itself that was carried down the slope and buried in the snow. Bill Glued says it threatened to pull down even more towers.
And they came up with the thoroughly ingenious method of using a deer hunting rifle from the helicopter to shoot out the glass insulator bells to drop the cables. They were able to drop all the cables, take the tension off the towers, and save quite a few towers.
Repairs were finished by June 1st, which was nearly 2 months after the slides, but much earlier than expected. Glued made several recommendations to the electric utility in the aftermath. Since then, 40-foot-tall steel structures were built around some towers to divert snow away from them. There's now a state-of-the-art avalanche forecasting and control program. GLUD says the utility is now much better equipped to deal with any potential avalanche hazards along the transmission line.
Yes, it's pretty much a night and day difference.
As part of the avalanche mitigation plan, helicopters hovering over the slopes above the power lines are a common winter sight. Since 2010, the utility has been using a device called a Daisy Bill that hangs down under the choppers and produces a controlled targeted blast on the snow. The city will never be completely safe. Just this winter, a controlled avalanche wiped out a section of those same transmission lines close to downtown Juneau. Fortunately, the utility had already switched to a set of redundant backup lines buried under that particular avalanche chute, so this time, residents didn't even notice. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Tomorrow during Morning Edition, we'll look at the history of Juneau's Barrens neighborhood and why there are houses in one of the most dangerous avalanche paths in the country. After a late snowmelt, Chilkat Valley brown bears are out of hibernation and looking for food. Last year, there was a record number of bears killed, which launched several community initiatives to address bear attractants. Biologists and public safety officials say those prevention efforts could serve Haines well this year. Corrine Smith with KHNS reports.
Almost every day, sometimes twice a day, Haines residents are receiving NICS alerts from the Haines Police Department that there is a bear in the area. This week, there was an alert during the afternoon that a brown bear was seen on Main Street headed towards the school. Alaska Department of Fish and Game wildlife biologist Carl Koch says with the late snow melt, there's been less vegetation and bears are scavenging for food.
And they have an excellent sense of smell. Some say it's, you know, as good or better than a bloodhound.
Koch says beginning in 2019, salmon runs and berry yields were poor, leading to intense scavenging activity for bears and for Haines.
The landfill was a little bit more secure, but there was an awful lot of, you know, freezers and things like that that bears had been getting into, including some, you know, dumpsters that were unsecure and things like that.
Last year, there were a record number of bears in and around Haines and even breaking into homes and cars, meaning they were food conditioned. In total, there were 452 calls to Haines police and an unprecedented 46 bears killed. Haines Police Chief Heath Scott says that is to be avoided this year, but he is still concerned. At this time last year, there were 52 bear-related calls, according to Scott. This year, there's been 35.
So they're tracking pretty closely. I think we're going to have an as involved year as we did last year. So we're just going to help keep everyone informed about what's going on and try and hope that we prevent some of these interactions.
Wildlife biologist Carl Koch says Haines has already put several prevention measures into place which should serve the community well this year. There's more fencing at the Haines dump, a new bear task force, the NICSL alert system for sightings, and a bear ordinance. Residents are required to secure trash cans and any other attractants like chicken coops, pet food, or anything outside or in cars.
You know, there's certainly no judgment here. You know, we live around bears. People are going to have bears come in their yard. We just know that if things are really secured well, the number of calls will be more manageable and it'll be better for everybody in the community.
For more resources or information about living with bears, you can see their website at alaskabears.alaska.gov. In Haines, I'm Corrine Smith.
As of today, Chitna dip netters can no longer keep king salmon they catch in the Copper River personal use fishery. The Upper River sport fish king harvest has meanwhile been reduced from 4 fish to 1 for the rest of the season. Both changes reflect a weaker than expected king run. State Upper Copper River biologist Mark Somerville says sonar, sampling wheel, and harvest data indicate the return is coming in even weaker than an already subpar forecast.
Below the forecast of 37,000 kings, somewhere right around the what we look for the lower bound escapement goal of 24,000.
Meanwhile, Somerville says the Copper River sockeye return has improved in recent weeks. A below average 1.35 million sockeye were forecast, and after a dismal start, Somerville says things are looking better midway through the run.
We're tracking right now to meet or exceed the lower bound of the in-river goal, which should give us plenty of room for meeting escapement for sockeye in the Copper River and still allow opportunity for fishing in all the upriver fisheries.
He says that the commercial fishery on the Copper River Delta had to be closed for quite a while to ensure escapement. Somerville says while the sockeye run will be better than last year's exceptionally weak return, it will still be below forecast and among the lowest 10% on record.